This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Oh, I tell you, Jennifer, she is really a party pooper.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Jennifer poops at parties, so and people know this.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
I poop at parties. I poop at parties, but people don't know because I close the door.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Where does she go for it? Does she visit a water closet and make door of the open so people may see and smell things? This sound horrible.
The Fan. New York
streets will kill us. All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan. If you missed the first hour, you can check it out, 1080thefan.com, Les Schwab Tires podcast on-demand section. We'll hear from Chris Peterson, get his thoughts on the Oregon Ducks. He doesn't talk often, but when he does, we try to listen. Nobody can get an interview with that guy.
Nobody's talking up there this week. They're going cone of silence.
We had a boss man was like, hey, Cam's working on Chris Peterson, so be ready because we don't know if we're going to get him. And I just thought, Cam's a Husky and he's struggling to get him. Nobody can talk to Chris Peterson.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to talk to a duck and a beaver. He's like, yeah,
I'm sure he'll know we're ducks and beavers.
He looks up our graduation history. He knows our transcripts.
We will get to some basketball nuggets at 1:30. The Jimmy Butler story is just absolutely amazing. So we'll talk about that. And then we have a very pressing question that's been asked several times throughout human history.
This is going to be so stupid. This is going to be dumb. It's going to be fun.
Okay.
But it's going to be dumb.
Dumb because we're all going to agree on the same thing, or dumb because just the differing opinions on that?
I don't know. I just have a bad feeling about this one.
Well, look, if it's dumb, we'll just call an audible.
Okay.
And that's the beauty of radio. You can call an audible.
Okay. We might need somebody to call in with like specific definitions on this thing, too.
We'll do that. We'll do that here.
Open the phone lines up.
Hey, call in. Give us your thoughts on this question. But let's get to the Oregon-Washington game. Haven't dove in a ton with that. We talked to Mario Cristobal yesterday. He's super fired up and ready for that game. He acknowledges the rivalry. And I'm not citing you. I'm not citing a couple other people in the building. I'm kind of just citing what I've observed throughout some people outside of work, social media, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be Duck fans that are confident. Not that it's a guarantee they're going to win. They're just confident. Should they be confident going against Washington?
Yeah, I think you should. And I don't know if confidence is the right word. I think there's just an excitement about this game because it finally matters again. And it's not like we went that long without the game mattering, but you just take a look at the last 2 years when Washington hung 70 on them at Autzen, and then last year, you knew you were going to lose 2 years ago. Washington was on their way to a college football playoff. They were a juggernaut. They hadn't lost at that point in the season. You had a freshman starting his first game. You knew it was going to be a bloodbath. And so there wasn't a whole lot of excitement going into that game outside of seeing what Herbert had. And then last year, Braxton Burmeister started this game, and he threw for 31 yards.
Yeah, you knew they were losing last year.
You knew it.
Two years ago, too.
There was no anticipation. There was no hype. There was no excitement because it was just, are we going to lose by 30? Are they going to lose by 40? Is Washington going to hang another 70 on them? You knew it was going to be terrible. So I think there is a certain level of confidence, but I think it mostly is just an excitement of finally having this game where both teams seem to be really good, and this should be a really fun four-quarter battle.
It's been pointed out several times here on the station. When was the last time the game meant something? Not the rivalry itself, because the rivalry will always mean something, but when was the last time, like, Oregon fan is going to think, oh my God, you beat Washington, you got Washington State, and after that, it's probably clear-cut you're going to the Pac-12 title game. And then for Washington, they have to run the table to have a shot at the playoffs.
It's a huge game for them.
So when was the last time it meant something?
I would go, the rivalry games always mean something. You're right there.
I get that, but
I think the game 3 years ago when Vernon Adams beat him up in Seattle was a pretty big one.
That was his first year?
I think it was his second year.
So they had 7 wins in year 2. They had 8 his first year.
But that was a game I think Washington thought they were going to win, because I believe the week before that game happened was the Utah debacle when Vernon Adams got hurt and they lost that game by like 40 points at home.
That was 62-14, right?
Yeah, something like that. Something crazy. And then he came back and they beat him in Seattle. That was a big one. I remember a Mariota year that we went up there for the game, and it was a big one where people were wondering, is Washington back? Like, is this kind of their moment? And
that was their first season in New Husky Stadium.
And they just, and Sark was still there, but it was that was a big one. And then Mariota eventually pulled away and they won it. Yeah, they won 26-20. That was the game 3 years ago. And the week prior to that, they lost to Washington State in overtime. And then a couple of weeks prior to that, they lost the game to Utah. But that was the first game for Vernon Adams coming back. And then that launched them to a 9-3 record, and they won out from that.
Yeah, the last time both teams were ranked was 2013. I think that's the Mariota game. Yep. Oregon was 2.
That was a close game in the second half, and he broke away.
45-24, they won. Yeah.
But that score doesn't even indicate how close that game was. Because remember, he had a couple runs. If they would have stopped him, I think they would have got the ball back, and you're like, oh my god, they could do it. And then he broke away and he got a huge run, and he ended up being the difference there, as he was most times when he was starting for Oregon. So yeah, I mean, you could go a couple of those examples. This one just, it feels ginormous, and I think part of the reason I feel this way is because I'm in a building where you have a lot of Duck fans who are super fired up for this one. And then just thinking about Washington, I know their offense has not, it's not been stellar. It's been very inconsistent. A lot of people disappointed with Jake Browning. We're still talking about the best defense in the conference here.
We are.
And I think that can tend, that tends to get a little overlooked, maybe more than it should, because as we've mentioned before, I think this game is really going to boil down to their defense versus Oregon's offense. I think Oregon's offense, as inconsistent as Browning is, I think even if you slow the run down, and I'm not sure they will. And that's something I can't wait to see, too, with the defensive line of Oregon, because Stanford didn't run the ball very well at all against Oregon. They still averaged 3 yards per carry. Washington's a better running team than Stanford. Can they push that to 4.5 to 5? But even if they slow it down and Washington has to throw, I do think Jake Browning can beat the secondary of Oregon's defense and be successful. I really want to see Justin Herbert against what Washington's defense is going to present.
Yeah, the weakness in Oregon's defense is the secondary. There's no doubt about that. We've seen that too many times to count, although it was nice to see him force a couple of turnovers against Cal. But I don't know. Browning's turnover prone, but he's not that bad. Some of those passes were terrible from Cal. I think the optimism around Oregon potentially winning this game has a lot to do with Herbert, but it also has a lot to do with the circumstances surrounding it. And I think that was something that we all circled coming into the year, where Oregon's fresh off of a bye. You read their injury report, and everybody's going to give it a go outside of Cam McCormick, who's done for the year. Everybody else is healthy and playing. Washington had to go on the road last week to L.A., and yeah, I mean, sure, it was never really in doubt that they were going to win, but you had Myles Gaskin in there in the fourth quarter holding his shoulders, still making carries. Like, there is something to that. And then they had to fly back to Seattle. Now they have to fly down to Eugene and play again. So I think there's a lot of circumstances that surround people being optimistic about Oregon. But some of the numbers that have stood out to me just in looking at it, Washington's defense is the best of the conference. There's no doubt about it. But the one weakness that they do have, and Adam Jude actually brought this up, and I'm glad he did this morning with Dusty and Cam, is that they don't get after the quarterback very well. In 6 games, Washington's defense only has 8 sacks.
Yeah.
That's not good. It's one of the lowest totals in the conference. Just for a perspective, Oregon has 16 sacks in 5 games from their defense. So that's one to me, if I was a Husky fan, that would concern me, is that their inability at times to get after the quarterback. Because if you give Herbert time to throw the ball, I don't care how good your secondary is, he will pick you apart. He's that good in my mind. So you could be able to bottle him up for 2 or 3 seconds, maybe 3 or 4 seconds. But if you can't get him pressure, you can't get pressure in his face, then he's going to find a way to beat you. And the other one is, The strengths of Oregon's defense is their front 7.
Right.
That's where they're best at. Yep. And you saw them for 2.5 quarters against Stanford have success, and then we all know what happened from there on out. But that's the strength of Washington's offense. So that, to me, is a fun strength versus strength of Washington's best when they're moving the line of scrimmage, when Myles Gaskin's running the football. But that is also the strength of Oregon's defense. I'm with you. I think Browning's going to be able to make some plays. Washington has some underrated playmakers on the outside. Oregon's secondary is a huge question mark, and it will be the rest of the year. And it's why a lot of people are terrified about that Washington State game next weekend. But there are some matchups that I like in this. Washington's inability to get after the quarterback and Oregon's strength being their front seven. They're the only defense in the conference to not give up a run of 30 yards or more this year.
I would ask you, and it kind of feels like I know the answer to this, outside of quarterback, what position group is Oregon better than Washington at? Do you think there's one?
I don't think there's that big of a gap on the offensive line.
But
I really
don't.
Do you
think Washington's is better, or are you saying, do you think Oregon's is
better? I haven't
seen
enough to say that Oregon's better.
The tough thing with Oregon, too, is because Stanford just faced Utah, and Utah can't throw. We know that.
Right, right.
That offensive line for Stanford is not looking good.
No,
it's
not.
And so it's just like, what is the true barometer of
it's
the,
a tough
of
part
the
with
Oregon,
Oregon yeah.
offensive line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
like, this is a test
front,
for them.
And with their front seven. I mean, they're second, I think, in the conference and rush defense behind only Utah. But, again, it goes back to who you played.
Exactly.
You had three patsies in non-conference that were no good. Cal doesn't have a dynamic offense, and you've played Stanford.
And we've seen Washington right. play Auburn and have, for like two quarters, kind of some shutdown defense against that Auburn team. And I know right. Auburn's not world beaters here, as they just lost to Mississippi State, but we know Auburn's a good football team, and there's no doubting about that. So
Gaines is a stud and, up front on their defense, but I think Jordan Scott is proven himself as one of the best defensive linemen in this conference. Maybe at an individual linebacker position with somebody like Troy Dye, I'll mm-hmm. give you. I think you have a chance there. Washington is the better team from top to bottom. Nobody denies it. They, at this point, definitely have the better head coach. Nobody denies that.
It's the quarterback position.
It's the quarterback
it really
position.
Is.
That's what I've always circled, is that that is Washington's weakness. Is his ability to push the ball down the field, his ability to be consistent. You don't usually see a senior make some of the mistakes that he's made. And Oregon's biggest strength is number 10. He can beat you running it. He can beat you throwing it.
Yeah.
He's smart. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. If Oregon wins this game, it'll come down to him. And you go back to Stanford, where in regulation, he was 25 of 27 in that game.
Yes, he was. He was. All right, what do you guys think? 55305 is the better to you today text line. How are you feeling about Oregon going head-to-head against Washington? Do you think that they have the advantage here, and are you feeling confident about it? We'll hear from Chris Peterson next. I have one more thought, too, on Jake Browning. We'll continue talking about Oregon-Washington next on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 117 on 1080 The Fan. Get some basketball nuggets. Crazy story coming out of Minneapolis with Jimmy Butler and the T-Wolves. Is the NBA MVP already locked up? Or should I make a bet? I don't know. And then also an anonymous scout on the Portland Trailblazers. One stat is blowing everybody's mind that nobody looked up.
No.
And nobody saw.
And then when you see it, it makes total sense.
With the person tied to it, yes. So we'll do that, and then we'll have to answer the age-old question, and we'll see if everybody agrees with this one. I think this is something that more people are going to agree on than go back and forth on.
Fair enough.
So we'll get to all of that. But we're talking Oregon-Washington, big game this week, and you're going to catch it here on The Fan, 12:30 kick down in Eugene.
We just roll, brother.
And they are just going to roll, brother. And that's going to be on ABC. Looking forward to that game. Talking about this matchup, because we were mentioning the defensive lines, the pressure they're going to get defensively for both Oregon and Washington. The one thing I would say, and I'm probably going to look foolish when we look back on this on Monday.
Okay.
But I'm just going to go with my gut on this. I think the one thing that I would caution Oregon fan about, I know Jake Browning has been up and down. I really do think with that group of wide receivers, he has the ability to go do what KJ Costello did against you a couple weeks ago. And that's be something of 17 of 26, 300 plus yards, and get a couple touchdown passes. You may be able to pick him off if you can get pressure. For sure, Jelks and company can strip him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think I would just be careful assuming you're going to get the inconsistent bad Jake Browning versus being more mentally prepared for the Jake Browning who quietly is an assassin. Because as one listener points out, and I think this is a very fair comparison, he kind of is the Blake Bortles of college football. He won't turn it over five times, so not that extreme. But some games, he just will not make an impact or difference for you.
Right.
And other games, you'll look back and go, oh, Jake Browning was pretty good today.
How about that? Nice little game.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a huge fear for me. And I hope I'm not wrong on that one come Monday. He only has one 300-yard game this year, and it was against North Dakota.
Right.
So that to me, 9 touchdowns and 5 picks in 6 games, his numbers aren't going to jump off the board, and I don't think they will this weekend. Can he capitalize on a bad secondary? Sure. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he throws for 2-something, a couple of touchdowns. Washington's going to be able to score points on Oregon. I have no doubt about that. I do think Oregon is better defensively than we've seen them in quite some time. I really do believe in their front seven, and I think they should be able to at times bottle up Myles Gaskin, and I don't think he's going to go crazy on them running the football. But it kind of reminds me of the way that I felt going into the Stanford game. Like just looking at how many points Washington has scored in a lot of their matchups this year, I feel like I know what I'm going to get from Washington's offense. Like if I ask you how many points is Washington going to score on Saturday, what would you say?
27.
27, 28. Right?
That was
the same exact thing.
Creepy.
You look at their last 4 games.
That was creepy.
You guys are
don't
cycling.
Don't do that ever again. I didn't like that.
It's a cycle right
Sprague
now.
Sprague don't like that.
Last 4 games, 31, 35, 27, 21. Oregon's got a good defense. Not great. Good. Right. Secondary's not great. Front seven's great.
But let me flip it on
I feel like
you.
I know they're going to score 28. The question is going to become, can Oregon score more
than
that?
That's what I'm saying. Like, right. I think it's fair to do that, but like, let's flip it here now. And we mentioned this. Who has Oregon played? Cal just lost to Arizona, so I know you blew them out. We made money on that game because we knew they were going to do that. Stanford game was tough. You should have won that, but you didn't. You lost. So before that, who have you beaten? I think it's fair, as much as we do that Washington, and I get it, we should flip it on Oregon. Well, Oregon score 27 or more points on that Washington defense?
That, to me, is the biggest question. That's what I'm saying. I think that's why it's an exciting one for me. I don't see Washington coming in here and hanging 60 points. I don't see him hanging 40 points. I see them hanging high 20s, and that's where I think it just simply becomes, can Oregon match them? Because Washington has the advantage on defense, but Oregon has the advantage with a quarterback like Justin Herbert. That's why this is going to be such a fun matchup on Saturday.
All right, well, Chris Peterson was talking. Here's his thoughts on how different Oregon is this year.
Well, the defense, same structure, scheme. Coach Leavitt does a great job there, so we've seen him for a while. And their offense is significantly different. You know, a lot of the pistol influence from Jim Mastro, who we've known for a long time, was at Nevada, Coach Alt. So that's much different. And they do a nice job, and those guys are all playing hard. It's an excellent team.
They also have back-to-back road games. They played last weekend, and now they're on the road yet again. Here's Chris Peterson's thoughts on that.
I don't think like they're worn out or anything like that. I just think we were on the field for a long time in the second half on defense, and I think, you know, defense, you expend a tremendous amount of energy running sideline to sideline, and if you're going to, you know, see, you know, 12 and 15 play drives, I guess guys tired. And so, you know, more of that.
I think that's a part, too, to think about is back-to-back road games for them. As you mentioned, the defense was on the field a lot in the second half.
That's one of the reasons why people like Oregon in this game. Oregon's fresh.
I would expect them to run a lot of tempo, as much tempo, faster than they've run offense all season. Yes.
Yeah, because they haven't shown us a ton of tempo this year. We know they're going to a slightly different system. And I think that's the other thing I wonder. How efficient can the run game be against Washington?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it helps you get Tony Brooks-James back so he can stay. He'll know, like, if he's got to pick up blitz coverage or part of protections, he'll know him better than those younger guys. Breland is back at tight end. He can adjust blocking schemes very quickly on the fly. So more than just them being, you know, whatever they produce when they have the ball, I think if you can keep those guys out there for drives, they can adjust to whether you want to run, flip formations, all that sort of stuff faster than some of the younger guys that are filling in.
Can Oregon win this without a run game?
No.
No.
So what's the, okay, I did this to you for Stanford. Mm-hmm. What's the number that Oregon has to hit on the ground for, in your opinion, to beat Washington?
I think you have to have a combined 120 yards. I don't care if it's Verdell,
so not
Dye,
the best
Brooks James.
Running day,
no,
but
I don't think you need to be. I don't think you need to be dominant in that regard. You do need to have it to balance out the offense. And I do think Oregon's going to be able to run the ball because of what Swigard's mentioning is tempo. You saw him use it a lot, especially in that first half against Stanford. Whenever they would hit a big play, it was immediately rush up to the line of scrimmage, hike it, and hand it off. And Stanford, they couldn't quite catch up to it. So I think both teams are going to be able to run the ball a little. bit. It just, it all to me goes back to Justin Herbert. Like a Husky fan's texting in saying he hasn't seen a secondary like Washington, and he hasn't. There's no doubt about that. Since he played Washington, probably his freshman year, he hasn't seen a defense this good. But Washington's secondary also hasn't seen a quarterback anywhere close to what Justin Herbert is. Auburn's passing game is not dynamic. Utah has one of the worst offenses in the conference.
Right.
BYU's not known for slinging the ball over the place. So you can flip that either way. Yes, this will be his toughest test, but this will also be Washington's defense toughest test.
Well, a lot of people are liking Oregon, including Joel Cloud, who was on with Colin, who gives an upset pick every week. He was asked that today, and here's his upset pick of the weekend.
Upset of the week. It's really tough to go on the road twice in a row, consecutive weeks. Washington's doing it this week, playing at Oregon against a really good quarterback, probably going to be the first quarterback taken.
First player
Oregon
taken.
Off of a bye as well. Washington had to play a one-score game against UCLA last week in front of nobody at the Rose Bowl. I like Oregon over Washington this week. Herbert is a real deal. As a starter, he's 11-3, and they average 28 points or more in every single one of his starts. So watch out if you're Washington, because Washington has not looked great this season.
And I think that's
11-3. Where did he get that number from?
As a starter?
As a starter.
He started against Washington and lost. He started against USC and lost. Started against Arizona State and lost last year. Started against Boise State and lost in the bowl game.
I don't
started
think you're counting the bowl game.
Well, I just named you four.
I was probably coming into this season.
Maybe.
Yeah, his stat was wrong there. You're right.
Yeah, there's no way that's
right. Still, I think his point is still that Justin Herbert is the
difference. I love Herbert, but yeah.
Because as you mentioned earlier, if they didn't have Herbert, we're not picking Oregon. Right?
No.
Oregon hangs tough because Washington's been, but Herbert is the difference here.
Yeah.
Every metric we have used, and I don't mean this as a disrespect, but every metric we've used, coaching, total defense, offense, like, I just think right now you would say Washington is better, but the difference is number 10. It's Justin Herbert.
If Oregon wins this weekend, it doesn't mean they're a better football team than Washington. It means they were better on that Saturday.
I don't know about that, man.
Well, yeah.
Because you'd be kicking yourself about the Stanford, and you go, holy crap, they'd be undefeated at that point.
You would, but I still look at this, and it goes back to the conversation we were having a half hour ago just about this conference. Like, even if Oregon wins this weekend, and that would be awesome for me, Washington State's going to be a brutal test.
Oh, I think they could lose to Wazoo next weekend.
At Utah is going to be a tough test. They're always weird games when they play at Utah.
Right.
Arizona State is proven. Arizona State hung within a touchdown of Washington in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. That's just the kind of conference that we have this year. I think Oregon fan, if you do win this game, don't get to the mental state of running the table.
Right.
There are a lot of landmines left.
You can't help but do that, right? Like, you look at the schedule and go, well, we beat Washington, who is the best in a lot of people's eyes. We're gonna do it. A good point here, wasn't Cal's secondary supposed to be the best in the conference? Yeah, I mean, that was the storyline for the game, but I didn't personally buy that.
Right. That again though went back to it's the reason I brought up the sack stat is that Cal couldn't get pressure on Herbert.
Right.
They gave him time to throw the football, and he showed you what he can do.
Nice, yep.
And then even if you give him time and he can't find somebody, then he's going to scramble around and he's going to pick up a first down because he can move with the best of them.
And I'm refuting this point. Sprague really hates when an Oregon fan is excited about something.
You do. You are. You're bummer brandoning my excitement today.
I'm refuting that. That's not true.
It's okay. You just hate Oregon. It's all right. We can acknowledge this.
I don't hate Oregon. Don't hate Oregon. Told you that several times.
You're just beaver honking it up over there, huh?
With my 1-4 start.
You just want to talk about Jamar Jefferson next segment, don't you? Huh?
I did rewatch a football game.
You did. You rewatched their game against the Cougs?
I did. I have a real problem with that. But you know what? Sometimes you do weird things when your team's not very good. All right. We'll get back into some college football later on. We got some NFL ahead. But coming up next, Dirt wants to dive into the NBA. He's got some NBA nuggets to get to. The Jimmy Butler story's weird. And how about a mind-blowing stat from a 7'1" NBA player? Can't believe it. We'll talk about it next. Ride loud. All the way to the
sound. Hey, welcome back in 1:34. Take a look at some NFL news and notes coming up top of the hour. Of course, stat or story still to get to. There is quite the scene going on in Minnesota today. Yes, we're going to talk a little NBA. And yes, this was my idea. I gave the permission.
Thank you for being honest about that.
I'll acknowledge
it. He got a 24-hour pass.
He's got a pass until next Thursday when the season starts, or if Jimmy Butler's traded. So Jimmy Butler is still, he still wants out of Minnesota. He wants to get traded. He wants gone. It sounds like them and Miami are rekindling their trade talks, and we'll see if anything actually happens there. But he showed up to Timberwolves practice today.
Yes, he did.
Ooh, ooh, Jimmy, hey, how you doing,
Jimmy's
Jimmy?
Jimmy's back in the house.
Jimmy don't take nothing from nobody. So he shows up, and Woj had all sorts of bombs on this bad boy because wait till you hear what he did. So he participated in Timberwolves practice, and in the practice session, sources told Woj he verbally challenged his teammates, his coaches, and the front office. He was vociferous and emotional at times, targeting Thibodeau, Layden, Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. And during the scrimmage at one point, he turned to GM Scott Layden and screamed, "You bleeping need me. You can't win without me." He left his teammates and coaches largely speechless. He dominated the gym in every way, Woj wrote. He then posted a story on this, and it sounded like Butler essentially teamed up with the third stringers. Just as a point, he said, "Give me the third stringers. I'm going to play with those guys."
Yeah.
He beat the starters.
He did, yeah. And then Tolliver and Teague were asked about this post-practice, and neither one would really dive into what was being said and done. A funny point I saw on Twitter was Tibbs was probably being screamed at some point by Jimmy and got slightly aroused by this because that's right up Tibbs' alley.
Yeah.
He warned them about this. He told the team, "Trade me. I do not want to be back here. This relationship is over. I don't get along with Kat. I don't get along with Wiggins. I don't want to be there." He let you know to not bring him back. And Tibbs and the GM, Scott Layden, and the owner, Glenn Taylor, they have not been able to accommodate a trade. And so guess what he did? He made a point to let them know how unhappy he is. I can't wait to watch the ESPN interview he did, by the way, right after practice.
Yeah, he's sitting down with ESPN. It will air on SportsCenter later today.
So watching what he has to say about that is going to be very interesting. He warned you that this was a possibility. And so I'm not telling you it's right for him to act this way and to treat people that way. It's not. But you can't also be surprised when somebody says, "Dude, don't do this." And then when you do it, guess what happens? Don't walk up to the guy at the bar and punch him and then be shocked if he punches you right back in the face.
This, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, this is a bad look, but it's also hilarious.
This is amazing. This is why the NBA is amazing.
He said, "Trade me. I don't want to be here anymore." The Timberwolves are trying to call his bluff, and they're demanding all sorts of things out of a guy who could leave wherever he goes after next season. He has an opt-out after 1 year, so he's essentially, depending on the team who trades for him, a one-year rental for that new team. They're refusing to trade him, so he finally shows. This is the first practice he showed up to all fall. They've been practicing for, 3.5 weeks now? They've already had preseason games. He shows up, dominates the entire team, yells at the coaches, yells at the GM that you need me. The fact that he was able to pair up with the third stringers and just dominate the starters tells me all I need to know.
Well,
and I think this, if I were another team looking at you, Blazers, this skyrockets his value in my mind. This guy is pissed. He is going to be on a mission this year to send a message to the rest of the league. He was so angry he went to practice and won a scrimmage pickup game with third stringers over Karl-Anthony Towns, Wiggins,
wow.
Teague. You bet your ass I'd trade for him in a heartbeat.
You
what
want
do you
to
want?
Get angry Jimmy Butler, huh?
I want angry anybody. Contract year and angry Jimmy Butler, sign me up for a season
you
of that.
You don't worry about what he potentially does with the chemistry and everything?
No, I don't care.
You don't care about
it's
that?
It's 1 year. He could leave if he's not happy about it. He's got an opt-out at the end of the year.
Well, look, let's take the Blazers out of this for a quick second. Tibbs doesn't want to trade him. The owner does. And so the confusion, this is according to Woj, this is according to Haynes. The confusion is teams don't know who to call. They have no idea. Do I call the owner? Do I call Tibbs? They don't know what to do. And they're also asking for the moon for a one-year rental.
They're asking way too much.
Like Miami leaked what they were trying to ask for, and everybody's like, okay, that's a bit aggressive for a guy that's on a one-year rental, basically, unless he's willing to commit. This is Jimmy Butler has obvious concerns here. Multiple staffs in Chicago. And now he's been in Minnesota. He can't get along. He obviously has something that needs to be kind of labeled on him. But Minnesota's so, gosh dang, dysfunctional. They're just one of those organizations.
How did this get so bad?
I think him and Carl Anthony Towns really hate each other.
That's it. And I know Wiggins has had his moments too. Remember, Wiggins all last season bitched about not being a top two guy, well, like he was their number three option.
Think about it for a quick second too. They gave Wiggins that max deal.
They did.
They didn't give Jimmy Butler the same amount. And then what did they do this offseason after Butler said he wanted out? They strategically announced that they gave Carl Anthony Towns a max deal. So they paid two other players, one of which he is absolutely better than. There's no question.
No doubt about that with Wiggins, yeah.
They gave two other players more money than they were willing to give him. That's one way to say, yeah, well, bye-bye.
Yeah, speaking of this, with the Jimmy Butler stuff, there was a piece on SI that came out today. I love anonymous stuff. They do like anonymous GM polls of, you know, like best player and this and that. We didn't talk too much about that because the Blazers were irrelevant and they weren't really included in anything.
Literally not included, yeah.
Literally, the only thing that showed up was like CJ McCollum was voted as a potential future head coach. All right.
I'll drop what everybody's thinking.
No one cares!
So this one, though, is anonymous NBA scouts. So scouts for certain teams. And they were asked to give specific thoughts on every organization across the league. So the Blazers had to be included in this because they indeed are in the NBA. And they had this note from an anonymous scout, and it goes into what we were just talking about. On CJ McCollum, they say he is a stud on offense. He's a dynamic scorer. He can shoot it from mid-range and way beyond the arc. He's one of the craftiest ball handlers and pick-and-roll guys. He can get better at getting to the free-throw line, but he's so crafty that he shifts away from defenders that it sometimes works against him. He's not huge on seeking out contact. I wouldn't trade either him or Damian Lillard. Would you rather have Jimmy Butler and his health and attitude questions or have CJ? I'd rather just have CJ and sleep easy at night.
Well, I don't know if you're sleeping easy at night. You haven't won a playoff game. What have they lost? Six in a row?
Isn't it eight in a row?
Is it eight? Yeah, that's right.
Back they got swept by the Warriors and swept
by
the Pelicans.
It might even be more than eight. So you've lost at least eight games in a row. Yeah, I think it's nine.
It's got to be at least nine.
Because the closeout game against Golden State 2 years prior.
Did they win game they won a game in that series, didn't they? Or did they get swept in that series too? I can't remember. That's second round series.
Well, anyways, let's just say eight for argument's sake. You've lost eight games in a row in the playoffs. You were a three seed and got swept by a six seed, something that hadn't happened in the Western Conference playoff picture since 1978. I don't know about sleeping easy at night. I see what he's saying, but you're also talking about a two-way impact player on Jimmy Butler versus a one-way impact player.
Yeah. It's funny, too, because a lot of people have echoed this sentiment. There was a piece in Bleacher Report about it, and another anonymous scout brought it up, too, where they wrote about the Blazers. One issue is that Lillard and McCollum are older and in their prime, and almost the whole roster is really, really young.
Yeah.
The front office has gone too far towards the youth movement. If I were Dame or CJ, I'd be getting frustrated with the strategy. Their time to win is now.
It's 10 in a row, listeners say.
10 in a row. Thank you. And that is paired with a Bleacher Report piece that said Dame should request a trade, which...
Don't read it. It's a bad read. It's dumb.
There was one other note from an anonymous scout that needs to be brought up, not to just pile on the guy, but then when something like this is put into a piece, it needs to be read. So a scout shares a thought on Myers Leonard. Here's what he writes.
He's wrong on this, by the way.
Oh, he is? He got his stat wrong?
No. The stat's right. He's wrong with the first couple lines.
Okay, so he says, I've given up on Myers Leonard at this point, and I bet Portland would have given up on him by now, too.
False.
If they could have.
That's false.
But now Davis is gone, so they have to They have a hole at the fourth spot. I can't believe he didn't block a single shot last year.
Okay, it's false on giving up. They didn't give up on him because, one, they gave him that contract a couple of years ago, and two, if you look at the moves they made, they literally put him in a spot where they have to play him 18 to 24 minutes a night. He's going to play more than Caleb Swanigan. He's going to play substantial amount of minutes this year, and this is what Neil Olshey wants. So I don't know about the giving up part.
Can we get back to this, Dad, though?
How are you? Yeah.
He didn't block a shot.
5'9 Isaiah Thomas had a block shot last year. 7'1", not one?
He's like one of the biggest, most intimidating NBA guys that I've ever seen. He's that big.
He's a big person.
He's a monster human being.
Yeah. And he didn't have one. How did nobody catch this? A beat reporter? Nobody caught that he didn't finish with one block shot last year?
That was the first thing. I haven't watched any of their preseason action, but I saw in their opener when they played the Raptors that everybody was raving about him scoring 15 points. And the first thing I noticed, he played 16 minutes and he didn't have a rebound.
He didn't have a rebound, no.
So So there you go. Anonymous scouts. We'll tweet that out at Thurton Sprague if you want to go read it. There's
he literally logged zero block shots last year.
Yeah, you check the stats.
He played 33 games.
Yep.
And he averaged almost 8 minutes.
8 minutes a game. Not just one. He couldn't even just run into one. Just be in the right place at the right time. There's notes in here about Lillard, Nurkic, Collins, Curry, Stauskas, Gary Trent Jr. So we'll tweet this out if you want to go read it. You just scroll down to the
Facebook
Blazers.
Too.
Oh, you put it on Facebook too.
On okay. Facebook page,
so facebook.com/1080thefan. Sticking with one more NBA note, Anfernee Simons has an opinion that is controversial. Or is it?
May not be.
I want to hear what the Oracle has to say about this.
Okay.
Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I was out at the Glorious House of Gaines this morning.
Let's go! Nice job!
Thank you.
Way to show up.
I did, man, I did. Got my work in. The rower, do you ever do the rower?
I do the rower on back day.
Rower almost murdered me today.
Yeah, rowers can be tough.
Close with the rower.
You ever do a, I know this is a side note.
Side note?
You do one of those Orange Theory workouts?
I never have.
I did one time. The rower's included in
that.
Brutal.
Yeah, the rower is, like, you actually sprint on a rower.
Yeah.
I did one. They used to have, they still do it, Crunch, like these, like, Wanna Win Wednesdays where they have, like, a challenge.
Right.
Like, a physical challenge. And when I used to work out in the afternoon, I would get there, and they would always make me do the challenge, and I hated it because I was never going to win. There are bigger and stronger people than me that work out there. And one of them was rowing 1,000 meters in, like, less than 5 minutes.
Right.
And I thought I was going to die. It was that bad. I couldn't even get the rest of my workout. And I was like, you know what? I'll see you guys next week. I'm getting out of here. So good workout today. NFL whip around. Some news and notes out of the league coming up top of the hour. And then Statter Story. Let's get right to this question, shall we? 55305 is the Better You Today text line.
Okay.
Are we ready for this?
I think we are. And my hot take is everybody's going to agree on the same answer.
The question is water wet?
Yes. Yes, that's the question. That's the question.
Now, did you say yes?
And then no.
Because he played a buzzer?
No, I said it as he played the buzzer. He was saying no with the buzzer. I'm saying yes, that's the question.
Okay.
The answer is very simple.
If you're wondering where this came from, Anfernee Simons, the new Blazer rookie, since we're on a little NBA tangent here.
Yeah.
He was doing a thing on Reddit last week, some question and answer kind of thing. I don't go on Reddit, so I don't know how it works, but that's what it sounded like. And so people were asking him questions about high school ball and, you know, going to the NBA, goals, jersey numbers, all this kind of stuff, right? And then somebody on Reddit fired the question to him, simply asking, do y'all think water is wet? And Anfernee Simons responded, no, water is not wet. Whatever water gets on is wet.
Right. Water's a liquid.
So we're all in agreement that Anfernee Simons is right. Water is not indeed wet.
He is 100% right.
Okay.
He nailed it.
But I would say on the water is wet thing, I believe this blows more people's minds than you think. Maybe not all our listeners. But this is a real argument for people about water, wet, etc., because people believe if it can get something wet, it in itself is wet. But it's not. It's a liquid.
We needed like Papa Swag to call in on this one.
Well,
give us the chemical breakdown.
We don't. We don't need a science teacher. This is an easy answer. It's not wet.
So you're saying this is a controversial issue. We have this as a poll question today at Thurton Sprague on Twitter.
Okay.
Is water wet?
Yes.
Simple. Yes or no answer.
Uh-huh.
54% of people are saying yes.
They're wrong.
46% of people are saying no.
Water is a description. Being wet is a description of what the substance is or makes or stems from. It is not in itself wet. It makes objects wet.
There's a planet science definition on this. I was reading a CBS Sports article on this. Their planet science definition, there's what they said. Wetness is our description of what we feel when we put our hand in water. Saying water is wet is like saying that wood is hard or fire is hot. That was the planet science definition.
Now, that's kind of mind-blowing. That changes it a little bit.
Right? So they're saying, I mean, yeah, do you say fire is hot?
Yeah, because it makes you hot, but I wouldn't say, well.
Do you say that wood is hard?
It feels hard. Yes.
Not when it's wet.
Can we pull that?
Oh, sorry.
Can we pull that too?
Okay, I'll give you
Did
this.
Did I blow your mind a little bit right
you
there?
You kind of switched my thinking process on this.
You're bouncing back and forth, huh? According to UCSB Science Line, their response was, being a liquid, water itself, not wet, but can make other solid materials wet.
Yes. But the fire point is the problem here. Because I'm going, look, it's the same as water, I guess, essentially, right? Like, fire makes it hot. It makes things burn, but is fire in it? Well, I don't know.
You just want to stop.
I'm done trying to figure out what is it? Planet science?
Planet science, yeah.
Planet science is trying to tell me here. I don't know if that's an apt comparison. It feels like it is, but then it kind of goes against my thinking here.
And I don't know. I don't think water's wet. I think what water gets on is wet. That's my two cents on the
hot?
Issue. Yeah, it is. Fire is hot.
Is wood hard?
Yes, it is.
Fire is not always hot.
Example, please.
There are certain substances, certain gases, or that have a low temperature at which they produce flame. So you could put your hand over a flame.
Well, you could put your hand over
and
a
it
flame,
is not hot.
Can you hold it there?
Yeah.
And not get burned?
Yeah.
We said Wet Talk Wednesdays with Dirt and Spray. Call in with your best X story. 503-250-1080. Fire away, folks. What do you got? Yeah, this is a thing. There was a video that went viral. I can't remember how long ago it was, but this initially came up. There was a video that went viral of two guys arguing about this topic. And it was like one of those Laurel or Nanny, or what was the last word thing that we
Yanni
couldn't.
Yanni or Laurel.
Yanni or Laurel, right. Thank you. Which, or the green dress and the blue dress,
see,
or the gold dress, or
the
whatever
Laurel
the hell.
The Yanni one was dumb to me because I felt like people were just trolling on that. I thought that was fairly obvious. I don't care about sound waves and how we interpret it. That one was obvious. The dress one was not. And this one.
Oh, God, people are calling in.
When you add
oh,
to the
no. phone. Somebody asking the question, is dirt dirty?
Well, I have to ask a lot of other people that question. By the way, is that caller calling to talk about this or calling to tell us how much our show sucks?
He's calling to talk about this. We got like Colorblind Kyle on the line. We got like
we
water.
We have had Colorblind Kyle.
We got
yeah.
like Water Johnny on the line. He like wants to give us the
Water Willie.
Water Willie.
We need Water Willie.
The lowdown of if water is wet or not.
No,
so.
Final answer, water is not wet. It's a liquid that makes things wet.
Somebody's calling BS on swag. What flame can you hold your hand over and not get burned and it's not hot? What substance are you talking about?
I guess that's my thing is I'm not calling BS on you. I've never seen or heard of that, so
well,
I'm curious.
You know the stuff that when you see people juggling things that have a flame on the end of them?
Like a circus guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
The fuel or whatever is special so that it's not a scalding, burning.
Okay,
it burns at a very low temperature.
But it still burns.
It burns.
But you said it's not hot.
Somebody's saying tiki torches?
Tiki torches are still hot.
Yeah, I think that's still hot.
Because the question was, is fire hot? He said there are
not
flames
all fire
that are not hot.
Is hot. It depends on the fuel and the temperature at which it starts to burn.
Are we getting smarter with this conversation,
no.
or do listeners think we're getting
no.
dumber?
We are regressing as human beings. What did the listener want?
It's Will.
Oh, God. Seriously, was Will?
Yeah, he wants to put his philosophy minor to work. I told him we're at break, so he said he'd hold if you want to carry this
his
over.
His philosophy minor at work on this question?
Yes.
This is a philosophy question?
Yeah,
I didn't think so. I thought this was a science question.
I thought it was theology.
If Will just wants to come on the show, he could just come up and say, guys, I want to come on the show today.
Yeah, you just come knock on the door, man. You're right down the hallway.
Well, that would be weird if we're in the middle of a segment. Nice little knock on the door.
Right. Hey, can I come in?
We do need to go to break.
Okay.
I hate to break this up, but
we were having a really good conversation here, and it's just going to, you know.
Well, it's turning into fire because, again, I don't
want to. Somebody said, we know you're already dumb. No worries, guys.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
I
mean, you know, we're
I don't want to call BS on Swag, but I don't know if he is 100% right on this.
Cody tweeted us, you guys are definitely getting dumber, and so am I. You're welcome. You're welcome.
That's what we bring
Sometimes
to you
Sometimes you
need
day. To get a little, kill a couple of brain cells, you know? Booze does it. What can our show do it?
We've had a good Wednesday, so this is kind of par for the day.
I'm feeling great right now. Hey, is water wet? 55305. Okay, final hour of the show. Stat or story? That should be a fun one. Who's most likely to blow up after a show of the three of us? I shouldn't have put Swag in this, but maybe the two of us. We'll get to that. We'll take a look ahead to the NLCS, ALCS, some more football stuff. Load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.